Before I begin my remarks, let me do as I always do, and I'm invited back to the University of Virginia, and that is to thank the university for what it did to me at a very important moment in my career. I dare say that I would not have completed my dissertation, let alone have had a career, had not I come to the Woodson Institute in the early 1990s. I always try to recognize what people have done for me. In many ways, I can be an ungrateful wretch, but not when it's to people who pay my way through something. And so I want to say that the Institute has been wonderful to me over all these years, and the late Armstead Robinson was indeed one of my mentors and made a big difference in my career. But knowing that we're limited in time, and I also want to say that Pat Sullivan was here. And part of what I want to do here, and by the way, is Gail still here? Let me give a shout out to Gail in the back. Gail was at the Institute at that point in time in the early 90s, and I'm glad that she was able to come out today, because I've been back several times and I should have chased you down. I should have found you, Gail. Thanks for coming. Now, when Pat was here, and what I want to emphasize in this, and I don't want to take up too much time because we got to get back to the audience, is that every book is an intellectual project, and as many scholars as there are, there could be as many histories mm-hmm. of the NAACP.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Now imagine, if you will, had this history been written by a former member of the Communist Party. How would this history read? We don't have to go so extreme. Imagine if this history had been written by a labor historian who believed that there was a wrong turn taken in the South in the late 40s, where race was put on top of class. This history would read differently. What if this history had been written by a black nationalist scholar circa 1920? Or a black nationalist scholar circa the 1960s. The history of the NAACP reflects a vision of a particular scholar who has, nonetheless, all her professional career interacted with all these people. This is not a history in which Charles Hamilton Houston is the centerpiece. This is not a history in which Ella Baker is the centerpiece. This is not a history in which James Weldon Johnson is the centerpiece. And thank goodness this is not a history in which only Du Bois is the centerpiece. This is a history written by a scholar who, rather than writing a critique, a kind of combative study that I might have written, right, that wanted to take on everybody in the historiography, and laden this story with every debate, the internal tensions at the time, the historiographical debates, this book would be, in a sense, the worst dissertation a professor could have ever read and a student might have to suffer through. Okay? Instead, what we have is a book written by a scholar who is responding to all of that and who creates a narrative that, in effect, addresses the meta-narrative of what we consider to be the change in civil rights in America through the 20th century, and then she places the NAACP in a central position. Now, when I was here in the 1990s, Pat, I'm going to tell you something. There were whispers, okay? There were whispers. You know, Pat Sullivan is working on a book on a New Deal, and she's trying to act like Southern white liberals were important in changing the South. Now, this is just a failed project, some people would say, in whispers, because they liked you as a person, okay? And what that was coming from social historians who believed, sometimes as an article of faith more so than anything else, that change always happens from the bottom up, okay? And those folks were convinced that Jim Crow was the biggest, baddest monster that ever lived, and the people at the bottom had killed him. Now, I'm an intellectual historian by my first book, but I hope to live more lives. And I know something about the legal literature about Brown, okay? And those people are really intensely studying Brown. But you see, Pat Sullivan knows Brown, but she also knows those other cases. Oh, the scholars know those other cases. But what she knows is the relationship between the court cases and what's happening on the ground. And so we're quite fortunate. In her first book, she did make this case that the New Deal, no, it didn't change everything. It brought about days of hope. Days of hope. That there could be a black-white coalition on the ground. That the state can do something positive to change people's lives. And she wrote that up, and no one complained because at the bottom, they didn't. When they came to read the book, as they often do when they come to read the actual book, they find out that the scholar was going to make a nuanced argument about the role of Southern liberals in the process of change. And so Pat Sullivan has this understanding of mid-century America that made an understanding of the social movement from the bottom up and the top down, and she's been committed to that very social change. On a personal note, Pat and I had an argument one night. Pat misunderstood me in the way I think people were misunderstanding her. And this was the argument we had. I said, blacks aren't Southerners. Pat got mad. Do you remember that, Pat? She said, and she got really mad. When Pat gets mad, she gets mad, okay? And she looked at me and I said, oh my God, once again, I'm misunderstood. And what I was doing was looking at history from my way. I want to understand how blacks became Southerners. And what Pat has written is the answer to my question, in a sense, my assertion. She's written the history of how blacks became Southerners. See, blacks could be Southern like the flora and the fauna, but they could not be Southerners until this movement. And she has written a book about how this change took place in the South in its relationship to this organization that was a national organization. Now, having said all that you achieved, okay, because it is a great achievement, and it is the frame of this book. I've also been asked, I'm going to segue to it, well, what isn't in this book? What isn't in this book? And I say this with loving criticism, okay? Because no book can be all things.
No.
Okay? No book can be all things. This is the story that addresses how that national movement brought about change in the South. And to my mind, that is the great failure of our understanding of change in the 20th century. It's a limited vision of change. I believe, personally, and this would be the book I would write, if I could only hope to write one so good, I mean, in other words, I would go this way, in part, adding another book. I want to know how the NAACP in the North, and I'm convinced it happened in the North, not in the South, expanded our understanding of rights. You see, I don't treat everything like Jim Crow. Everything is not Jim Crow. I don't treat everything like slavery. In the last 2 days, there's been a little of that going on. Oppression takes many forms. And when we liken everything to the known hated form of oppression, that's a cheap way of getting people to agree with us. You hate Jim Crow, you'll hate this. If you hate slavery, if I call this slavery, you'll hate that. I've had many arguments with scholars about the Northern movement that doesn't start after the Southern movement. See that story we tell? 65, the Eyes on the Prize put the camera on the North. There was a struggle in the North all along. And that struggle in the North gave you two things in particular that you didn't get out of the South. Folks, Frederick Douglass would have never understood fair housing. Frederick Douglass would have never understood equal opportunity employment. It was that man's company for Frederick Douglass, that man's house for Frederick Douglass. They may go to hell for being prejudiced, but they had the right to that property. Part of the work that took place in the North, and I'm certain it came out of these NAACP branches, was to expand what we consider to be the public. Okay? to expand what we consider to be the public so that it would not have been discriminatory in the eyes of the law to keep black people out of factories before that became part of the public. It wouldn't have been discriminatory to keep black people out of your tenement until that became part of the public. And I'm saying that that took place, that my hypothesis is, it took place in the North. And it took place probably in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, well before the movement went north. And that if we need studies on the NAACP, we need them to deal with the issue of local struggles in the North. Don't forget that, now I gotta say, don't forget the NAACP was in the North. You see, because most of the Southern historians pretended that it wasn't in the South. And we also need to go back and recapture the history of the NAACP, like Professor Harold is doing, in the South before the so-called movement. Don't try to make all this stuff one thing. No one knew and no one lived in anticipation of the end of things. People live in the interim and they struggle in that moment and they win victories quite often at that moment. And so people struggling in the South in the 1920s in these branches, they won their small victories. It's what kept them going. The people in the North, they were winning their victories. That's what kept them going. And so as we look at the NAACP in the future, we need to kind of look at them at different periods around different issues and write monographs around them. Okay. The lawyers have more to say. I know I got to finish. The lawyers have more to say. They got that thing. But the social historian, the intellectual historians, the labor historians, it's at the local level. And then finally, I do think people need to write a book, of course, since the 60s. And I think there needs to be monographs written about the NAACP and the Communist Party, okay? There needs to be NAACP in the labor struggle. I think those books ought to be written. But if you're going to write a book of the NAACP, I think that Pat was wise, as, and I think Grace seems to agree with this, not to drag every battle to the point that you don't... Look, the NAACP succeeded. The Communist Party didn't. Now, I'm very left-leaning and nationalist-leaning quite often, but hey, the NAACP won, Garvey didn't. Okay? And so, let us not get confused by the people who still are housed in the academy and how they're disproportionately represented on our faculties to think that those people won. And I'm not against them. I'm just simply saying that for better or worse, black liberalism won out on this one.